Nobody heard that.
Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago.
Working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
All right, okay. Thank you very much, and welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I think the volume is a little bit too loud. Let me turn the, at least it sounds like that in my ears. Okay. All right. Welcome, everyone, to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I'm broadcasting live out of Chicago. If you can't listen to the show live, you can always podcast, get archived, listen to it live on the Internet if you want. And just anytime at your convenience, you know, but the show is on. If you can listen live. 347-857-1762 is my phone number. Call in, ask questions, do what you want to do, or sit back and just relax. And while I do all the work, okay, this is a great time. It's daylight savings time. The days are starting to last a little longer. And actually, it feels like springtime in Chicago. I mean, the weather has been really, really phenomenal. It's been 70 degrees, and it's not winter. Winter is not over yet. It is still here. We're having 70 degree weather. I mean, I was out earlier today, and I was totally in awe and enjoying the weather. So was a lot of other people. We were taking advantage of this because it may not happen again. But however, as I was watching the weather, they were saying it's going to be like this all week. And today is just Tuesday, and it's going to be like this all week. And well, bring it on! I'm going to enjoy it. We're all going to enjoy this. But you know what? When the weather is like this, it's winter, but it doesn't feel like winter. To me, I think we're being set up for the kill, actually. So because I do, because I want winter to be winter. I want spring to be spring. I want summer to be summer. But when you have all this whacked out weather, that this unusual weather, but it's great weather. I'm not complaining, but you know, it's just a little weird. And and I do seem as though we're being set up for the kill, because I think down the line, the weather is going to be really, really bad. Maybe even tornadoes in the city of Chicago. But anyway, hey, thanks for being here. Thanks for tuning in. I'm just running off at the mouth as usual. I'm trying to learn how to talk. I've been doing the show for almost 2 years. So bear with me if there's any kind of misstep I make on this show. All righty, let's. I think we have a caller on the line. Let's see who this person is. If I don't already know, caller, you're on the air. You're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Welcome, welcome aboard.
Hi, George. Hi,
Alexandria.
Hello, George. Yes.
Hey,
this is Alex Corgi.
How do you pronounce your last name? I didn't want to mess it up. That's
just
why
the way
I said.
Reason.
Oh, Okorji. Okay, all right.
Okorji, just the way it's written. Okorji.
Okorji. Okay, I didn't mention it because I didn't want to mess it up. I didn't want to screw it up.
I know that.
I was going, oh, Corey Ja or something. I was close, though.
No. You're close, but it's all right, Okoroji, well, just a way to reason. Yeah.
All right, no problem. Welcome to the show. Okay. Okay, you're going to talk about your book, The Naked Truth?
Yes, but you know what? First of all, thank you so much, Judge, for, you know, inviting me to be a guest on your show live all the way from Nigeria in Africa, and I'm very, very excited to be here, you know.
I'm excited to have you. You're in Nigeria as we speak?
Yes, yes. And
oh,
it's
wow, that's wonderful.
It's 1 a.m. here in Nigeria. It's 1 a.m. in Nigeria, but I'm very excited to be here, though, so yes.
Okay, I'm very excited to have you. Ladies and gentlemen, this is you are also an advocate for expression and multi-platform.
Yes.
And a multi-platform ambassador for self-empowerment and transformation, who has managed to successfully reinvent herself at every stage of your career, always connecting with your audience through your talent and endearing spirit. And you're also a radio host on Blog Talk Radio.
That's true. Very true.
You have your own show. Hey, maybe I can call into your show one of these days.
Exactly. I would love to have you on my show for sure. You know, it's The Naked Talk, and it's right here on Blog Talk Radio as well. And so, yes, it'll be nice to have you, you know, coming to my show, you know, in Nigeria and in Africa, and that would be great, really, Judge. I would love for that to happen.
That would be awesome. That would totally be awesome, you know. That would totally be awesome. So tell us about yourself before you actually get into your book.
I am, you know, a lot of people refer to me as an expressionist, but really I'm an artist. I'm an actress here in Nigeria, but I'm also a writer. I'm a television personality and a radio host, like you already said. And an author, but really, what do? I basically use different mediums of the art to sort of promote expression and, you know, empower people to live their authentic best. So, yes, I do have, you know, I'm also the founder of The Naked Movement, and really The Naked Movement is pretty much, you know, a movement that promotes authentic living, really, which is, you know, about, you know, helping people to be naked, really. And, you
wow.
know, being naked is, you know,
literally,
being naked
literally
really
naked?
Is, well, not literally, and you know what I mean, Doug. but really, and that could be literal, really, but really, it's really just you stripping off the covers, right? It's a metaphor, but it's really you presenting yourself the way you really are. And
yes.
Not being ashamed to be transparent and to be honest and to be open and even be vulnerable, really, and just be authentic, right? And use that authenticity as a tool to basically transform your life. So it's really people mm-hmm. just not being ashamed to present themselves the way they really are, right?
Okay.
And acknowledging that you're not perfect and you have all of these flaws that you could use as a tool to really improve your life. So that's what being naked really is.
And you consider yourself as an expressionist?
Yes. You know, it gets really a little tedious when people ask you, what do you do? And you do all of these amazing things, right? So you're an actress, you're a talk radio host, you're a writer, you're all of this, and you have to keep saying that. And then I realized there was one common denominator, and that is the fact that all of this are expression platforms, and that I, you know, express myself either through my writing or through my performance as an actor on TV or movie or on screen or on stage, and, you know, express myself while talking, you know, as a speaker or while I'm on air. So I realized okay. that, you know, the real common denominator is that I'm an expressionist. I'm using this to express myself. So, so I consider myself to be an expressionist, really.
Yeah, that's great. That's wonderful. I mean, because I try to tell people, some of the people that come on my show and my audience, and I'm also an expressionist, mm-hmm. that because mm-hmm. I try to express myself in many genres, too. I am also a writer. I'm also mm-hmm. I'm on the radio, and I do a lot of teaching. And mm-hmm. And I used to tell people to, if you're going to do something, make sure you, if you're going to do something, do more than one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have talent to do one thing, you have the talent to do multiple things. And
very
you
true.
Too can be,
very true.
And you too can become an expressionist. And you have down here that you like keeping it real.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
what
I
do you
do.
Mean by that?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Here's the thing, Judge. I think that we live in a society where we all are trying to conform to society's expectations of who, you know, they think we are or should be, right, as opposed to just being our authentic self, right? So, have, you know, we're living our lives trying to make sure we're politically correct, that we, you know, live a persona that people expect us to be as opposed to being who we
yeah.
really are and sharing what we really feel and pursuing
mm-hmm.
what we really love. And, you know, just presenting ourselves the way we really are. And so, you know, I like to keep it real because I realize that I spent so many years just trying to be somebody else.
Oh, no.
Being who I really am. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
You, and that, you know, that sort of translates to so many things, you know, from our mm-hmm. career to our relationships to how we do business and how we partner with people and just how we basically live our lives, right? So
wow.
I've had, you know, I had particular experience. I've had some experience basically that sort of changed, you know, the way my perception of how, you know, people should basically lead their lives, right? And so going through, you know, I have a bad relationship. Not a bad, you know, I've had a series of relationships where really I had a divorce. I got married, got divorced. And, you know, moved back to Nigeria. And, you know, there's this media expectation because, you know, I was married to an actor as well, another actor from another West African country. And, of course, you know, being in the, you know, being in the spotlight, being in the media, there's an expectation of how people expect you to behave, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
There's that, there's also that natural expectation that, people in the entertainment industry, their relationships don't work, right? So people, you know, the moment you get married, people expect for you to break up anyway. And
yeah, you're right. They are looking for that. I mean, they are looking for that. I mean, that's news. I mean, that's all over the television.
Exactly. And you know when that happens, there's still a backlash because there are people judging you and the people, you know, have comments. And as well, there are some other people who are disappointed as well because they're rooting for you and they want you, you know, they want you to, they want you to, they kind of want you, you know, they're looking for this made in heaven or, you know, made in heaven match and they want you to work. They want it to work. But they forget that you're human as well, right? And you're
exactly.
like them. You have flaws mm-hmm. like them. But you're not perfect, mm-hmm. and there are issues, and you deal with issues, and we all have challenges. And what if
yes.
we were more open about the challenges that we have? What if we didn't present ourselves as perfect, because really perfection is a myth, right? Maybe we would be able to, you know, live the life that we really, really desire by just being authentic. Because here's the thing, you have all of these cover-ups, right? And you're packed with so many false covers, layers of who you're supposed to be. And the moment you start to strip all of those things, then you start to find your authentic self. And so really what happened to me was I moved back. I was going through a lot of, you know, I was feeling bitter. I didn't know how to deal with my issues because, again, in the African culture, it's not really, we don't see a shrink. I mean, black people, first of all, have a problem sitting, you know, across a psychologist. It's not really our culture here to sort of
yeah.
share, you know, your problems or your challenges with somebody else. And so, especially, again, being in the industry, I mean, I was worried about, I would go to an event and I'll be on the red carpet. And then, you know, a journalist or a press person is going to go, "Hey, Alex, what's going on? How's your marriage? How's your husband? How's you know?" And they have all these questions. And, you know, at first I would go, "Oh, we're fine, we're cool," you know. But then I realized I was lying, right? Because we're not cool. I was separated, and I was worried about how people would see me, And I was worried about tainting my family name. I was worried about a lot of things that I was lying, you know, to the public.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then I stopped going out. I stopped going out because I was worried about being asked questions and I didn't want to lie anymore about it. But then
yeah,
it got
yeah.
to the point that I started writing. And, you know, I said, you know what, how about I start sharing how I was feeling? So I couldn't talk to a shrink, but then I started keeping a journal, really. So I started sharing my thoughts and my feelings, and, you know, that sort of gave birth to the blog, Alexandra and Hinaika Thoughts. And then I started getting feedback from people, right? And people, you know, would go like, oh, I can relate to that. Oh, my God, you're so bold. You're so real. You're so open. And then, you know, so I started building basically like a support system for myself because people would read and feel like they could connect to it one way or another, or they knew someone who was going through exactly what I was going through, and that I
yes.
was a real human being, right? So kind of took up the layers of being a celebrity or being untouchable or unaccessible to really just being a regular human being that people could relate
yeah.
to, and they could also tap into their own issues, right? And I started
yeah, yeah.
healing, so to speak, because
Great.
They had feedback, and they had, you know, ideas, and I kind of was building a support system for myself. And here's the thing about expressing yourself and sharing, and I'm sure you probably know this even from, you know, hosting the show. There's a
yes.
certain awareness, you know, you make a lot of discovery when you start to express yourself, and there's a certain awareness that comes to you. And that awareness, you know, you can take that awareness to the next stage, which is using what you have discovered about your situation, whether it's you want to make more money or whether you feel like, you know, you're trying to find the right kind of relationship or, you know, you're trying to decide you want to start a new career or a new business, whatever it is. But, you know, the discovery that you make, you can take that and use it to transform yourself or transform your life. So
yes,
really that's
yes.
what happens. Yeah.
So, what I like about this is, and some of the things that you just got through saying is that you're taking
mm-hmm.
some of your personal experiences and you're sharing it with
mm-hmm.
others out there who may be going through
mm-hmm.
some of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
Very
a good
true.
Thing. That's wonderful. I mean, because I do some of the same things sometimes. I write a lot of the things that I write and publish
mm-hmm.
comes from my life. Come from things I have
mm-hmm.
experienced, come from things that, you know,
mm-hmm.
have occurred. And sometimes I'll take that and just sort of fictionalize it. But it's
mm-hmm.
coming from me, you know. And that's
yeah.
a great thing. Yeah, I mean, because you have to kind of write what you know. You have to talk about what you know. You have
exactly.
to share what you know. If you don't know anything, you can't share it.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't had that experience, you can't really talk about it. But that's great because you want to take what you've experienced from maybe your failed relationships or a divorce or something
mm-hmm.
like that and try to help someone else
mm-hmm.
out
mm-hmm.
down the
mm-hmm.
line.
Mm-hmm. And yes, you're correct. You know, it really starts, I mean, I find it very funny when people are coaching or you're telling people about things that you haven't firsthand experienced. Right. And so it's more relatable when people feel like you've been there and you've done that, right? And you've learned,
yeah.
had lessons, and you've kind of paid the price for them. So you're in a position where you can actually influence and empower people with some of those experiences. And let me put it this way, you know, The Naked
yeah.
Truth really is a book that, you know, that offers wisdom to those who are struggling to accept the truth
Great.
About who they really are. You know, and
yes, yes,
what they
yes.
want out of life. And so my going through my divorce, right, wasn't just an effect on my emotional state. It wasn't an effect on my financial state. It was an effect on my career as well. Because just before I got married, I was this, you know, hot, bodied actress. And then I got married. And then I moved countries. And then I had a child. And then somewhere in the middle of that, I was getting a divorce, and I had this little baby, a 6-month-old baby, and I was moving back to a country.
You know what? I don't mean to cut you off,
mm-hmm.
but your story,
yeah.
What you just got through saying sounds exactly like something I have gone through. I mean, I'm
really?
Divorced, and I had – yeah, I'm divorced, and I had a little small baby with me, single dad, you know. So,
wow.
And I had to try
wow.
to get it together. You know, and well, he's 16 now, so I guess I did a pretty good job. But
well done.
But thanks. I think you've done a great job too. Especially when
you're facing
so much adversity, you know, you're facing all this adversity.
Mm-hmm.
And like I just got through saying, you want to take what you have experienced, because there's so many other people out there going through some of the same things. And you want to, I want to ask you something. You said that you were, it says here that you made your television debut as a foreigner in Daisy in Heaven's Gate. How was that? What kind of experience was that?
You're an actor, basically. You have to, I mean, I still play a foreigner, but really it was, as a newbie, it's an experience. You know, here's the thing, it's an experience. And I remember, I think it was my first television gig. It was my first television gig. I had how many episodes? I can't remember. But I had to play Daisy, who was this British returning into Nigeria. And, I kind of did it. You know how it is? I think the amazing thing about acting is that you get to the freedom, some sort of creative freedom, right, to express yourself as another person and kind of really just hide away and become.
Yeah.
So I think it was a great experience,
You know,
it was good.
I think at one time I could have been a good actor. I think I could have been a great actor, actually. I think I could have won a few Oscars if I'd have had the chance.
Yeah,
but if I'd have got the break, I thought I would have been a great actor. You know, and you did something called Betty and Spider.
Yes, Spider was a really very popular television series here in Nigeria, and it was on for years,
mm-hmm.
and I played a recurring role, Betty, and I think Betty was, she was an architect or something, but she was really, like, really feisty, and she was very, you know, from this very wealthy family, and, you know, she would get in.
Yeah.
I remember I played that, I was in that soap opera for a couple of years, maybe three or four years, yes. And quite a number of other stuff, really, But you see,
is
one of the
hard?
Amazing things
I've heard that it's pretty hard to get a job as an actor. A lot of actors are out of work.
Well, yeah. You know, here's the thing. I mean, some people are lucky to to be able to, I mean, if you're one of those actors who are able to find work, that's great. But, you know, for a lot of other actors, it's pretty difficult. But you have to kind of choose your niche, right? Do you want to do television, or do you want to do movies, or do you want to do stage? And some are lucky to be able to work on all different platforms, right? But, again, that's one of the things that happened, you know, when I moved countries, right? I was gone for 2 years, and that's a pretty long time to be gone, really, in the entertainment industry, because they're up-and-coming newbies, and just as you leave, someone else replaces you, and there are other people, you know, coming in. And so when I moved back, it was really difficult, right, because here I was, my body had changed a bit. I wasn't, you know, feeling like the person that I was when I left. I was going through all of these emotional challenges. I had a baby in tow, and the industry had changed a bit. I wasn't really sure how to introduce myself. You know, it was crazy.
Yeah,
and so,
yes,
then there was this propaganda that I had moved and I was no longer active. So it was just me having to come back to come clean up all of that mess, right? And then eventually I got back my role on Spider and as Betty, and then I started working again. So it can be really challenging, really, for you to get, you know, for you to get work as an actor. But then again, I also think that one of the things I've discovered, with being authentic and being conscious, is that you can sort of use authenticity really to reinvent yourself, right? You're the same person, but then you can sort of connect to a part of yourself that you probably haven't, you know, reconnect with yourself, reinvent yourself, and, you know, rebrand yourself, and then come back out and just slay, really. So that's what happened to me. So, yes, you know, I've been this person. I've been in the industry for how long? But then it was like there was a brand new Alex, right?
Right.
So it wasn't just physically, really, but in terms of emotionally as well as career-wise. So I didn't want to just end up being, like you said at the beginning of the show, you said something that when you have a talent and you're multi-talented, it's really good to be able to try your hands on other things and do as many things as you can. And so I figured, you know what, I didn't want to just be an actor and be seen as some blonde, some bimbo, right? Because that's the generic idea that people have of, you know, entertainers or, you know, actresses that, okay, they're just pretty and, you know, they read lines from a script and they know how to look good and that's it. But, you know, I wanted to hear part of myself that people didn't have access to, right?
Yeah.
Which is the intellectual side of myself. And that I was this great writer. Yes, I had been writing screenplay for movies, but then I wanted to be able to share nonfiction stuff with people, you know, just be able to open up myself with other people and tap into all of the wisdom that I had gained over the years and be seen to be more. And you really just use all of these things to influence people. So I started speaking, and then I started hosting the show, and using my other talents, really.
So how long have you been hosting your own Black Talk Radio show?
A year, and I think it started broadcasting in December 2014.
I started August 2014.
December 2014,
I'm gonna say you have a great voice for radio. I can understand that. I mean,
really, and, thank you.
Yeah, you do. What are some of the topics that you might cover on your show?
We talk about different things. I mean, it's a self-help show, so we would talk about. I mean, we talked about sex and social media and, you know, discovering secrets and, you know, we've talked about so many things, to be honest. I mean, we cover...
You talk about a lot of stuff.
From love, life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We talk about a lot of, you know, just experience, right? Obviously, it's a themed show and centered around, you know, my guests. But it's really boils down to having real, authentic conversations with these people and their experiences and using that to sort of empower the listener. So the conversations are naked. I kind of motivate my guests to be open and, you know, share their experience. So, yes, it's a theme. There's always a weekly theme. Mm-hmm. And then we talk, talk around it. So I interview them and we sort of channel the conversation around that theme, but hoping that the guests, you know, the listeners, the guests feel more authentic with themselves. They're open to sharing. And then the listener walks away with a lot of empowerment, you know. We talk about almost everything, you know. I've had all sorts of guests, from authors to musicians to writers to speakers to
same
coaches.
Here.
Oh, God, I've had every, you know, and different people from around. And here's what's amazing. That's one of the beauties beauty of the new media and the internet is that you can have conversation with people from around the world. I mean, look at how technology works. I'm here in Nigeria.
Exactly.
But I'm all the way in Chicago talking to Judge Wilder, and I think that's really, really amazing.
That's something.
Exactly. And I have people listening from here. So it's amazing how we can easily connect with one another and be able to basically use our platforms to empower people and share. So I really like being a radio.
Exactly. And a lot of the guests that I have on my show, I have some of the same topics that you have, and I try to diverse. Mm-hmm. I try to be diverse because I don't want to be talking about, you know, I don't want my show to be about just one thing. I want to, you know, talk about everything that I know that I can do on this show. And when I have authors on the show, sometimes I have authors, movie stars, actress, other talk show hosts. I don't actually interview them. A lot of them think I'm going to interview them when I invite them on the show, but I don't interview them. I do what you just said. We hold conversations. And I think that's getting your guests to relax. And when you're doing that, the guest opens up about whatever they want to talk about on the show. And the audience can feel that also, that that the guest is relaxed, the host is relaxed, and there's just a conversation, you know. And then the audience sit back, relax, and after the show is over, they give you feedback on the show. And that's great.
Yeah.
So I don't actually interview the guest. I hold conversations with them as if they're sitting right next to me. You know, and I think that's one of the better ways to go in keeping listenership.
You know, I agree with you. A lot of the times I've had guests and I run away from using the word. I never use the word interview. I always say conversation because it's a two-way street.
Sometimes I slip and say interview.
but here's the thing. It's a two-way street, right? Your guest has an opinion. They have an experience. You also have a perception, and you've got perspective and views and opinions about, you know, whatever the conversation is going to be about. And it's really more dynamic when, the host can contribute to the conversation and the guest can contribute, and it's really relaxed. And I think that's really what's really amazing about my show as well, is that it's unscripted, very unscripted, no script. It's uncut, it's uncensored, it's naked, you know, just the way you really are. So I kind of built that naked brand in a sense, and they love it, really, because it's you're allowed to be who you are and keep, you know, just be the way it is. So it's not
I agree. I totally agree.
It's not stiff. You know, it's not stiff. It's just really relaxed. Yeah. We have laugh a lot to talk about, like crack up, and it's great because whoever's listening is feeling like, you know, you're connecting with your guest, and the listeners are connecting as well. So, you know, I like having conversations, really. And I'm enjoying myself. I'm really enjoying being here in your show and just chatting with you.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. One other thing. Do you have any more you want to say about your book? I mean, do you have an excerpt? Would you like to read?
Well, I've got an excerpt. I didn't prepare to read an excerpt from the book. I would have loved to. Oh, my God. You know, I wish I knew that. I'm so used to being very unscripted, so I don't try to prepare
anything. Yeah, you just said you're unscripted.
Anything.
Now you need a script. Yeah.
You know, I don't try to prepare anything for it. But here's the thing, I would say, you know, first of all, I mean, even the most beautiful people, you know, would basically stand in front of the mirror, right? And they would see flaws and imperfections and things that they don't really like about themselves, right? And what I try to do is try and motivate people to accept those flaws. I'll be honest with you, Judge, if I stood in front of the mirror and I looked at the mirror, whatever I see staring back at me is the truth. I can't imagine standing naked in front of the mirror and seeing Judge, right? I would be seeing myself.
So seeing me?
But here's the thing. I won't see you. That's what I'm saying. But, you know, but the truth is a lot of people are delusional about their circumstances and their situation. So rather than seeing what's staring back at you, you want to imagine it's something else as opposed to accepting the truth about what's happening, right? An example, a typical example would be somebody who's, for example, overweight. Oh, and when I mean overweight, that you're uncomfortable with your weight. And you could be staring in the mirror and your size 28. And that's not a problem if you're not uncomfortable with it. But if you're uncomfortable with it, don't tell yourself that you're a 10 when you're a 28, because then you would not be able to achieve your desired goal if you're lying to yourself, right? So if I look at myself and I have a mole on my forehead, I'm not going to tell myself I'm spotless. Just so I'm going to tell myself, oh, this is problem area that I need to sort of tackle and resolve. Yes. And when I'm honest with myself, I can start to ask myself the right questions. Why am I where I am? So let's assume I'm overweight. Why am I here? What are the choices that I've been making? Perhaps I've been eating the wrong food, or maybe I'm not exercising enough, or maybe I just, you know. So you start to ask yourself a lot of questions, and that kind of brings certain awareness because you get to a point where you make a certain discovery. And then whatever you do with those, you know, with that discovery takes you to the transformation stage. So usually I would say being naked takes three different steps, like processes. The first step would be expression, and the second step will be awareness, and the third step will be transformation. But you know what's going to, and this is, sounds what?
Sounds good.
You know, but going to the book, The Naked Truth, you know, The Naked Truth really is a witty guide. I mean, you know, it talks about the truth about love, lies, sex, relationships, and just reinvention itself. And, you know, in this book, I basically share my personal experience, my observation of other people's, you know, personal experience, things that have been shared with me, you know, in talk therapy and coaching. And I just put all of that together to basically help the reader, you know, build a presence of mind and some sort of consciousness as to how they feel about some of these issues. For example,
Alexandria,
love, you know,
I don't mean to cut you off, but where can people go find your book, The Naked Truth? Where can they find it? Blog or website?
Yes, they can find it on my website. They can go to my official website at www.alexsecurity.me. Or they can find it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or any of their favorite online retail store, really. So they can just Google The Naked Truth and, you know, find the book, but they can go to my official website.
Okay, is there anything you haven't said already that you would like to say to the audience?
Not that I can think of.
Talked enough already.
I don't want to say, you know, I'm trying to be very careful. Here's why.
Yeah,
you know, I'm very chirpy, and I can talk for Africa, but I'm trying to be careful not to turn the Judge Wilder Show into the Alex Okoroji Show. So
No, that's okay. I mean, you've been on for a while now. That's okay. That's fine. We have no commercials. It's fine. It's great because I'm asking you the last question. When I say, do you have anything else you want to say, that's probably going to be it. And I'm pretty sure you know how to cut people off on your show. You know, so because basically there's no sponsorships on this show. There's no commercials. It's me. I can let the guests go on as long as they want to. But sometimes I do have to cut them off because I do have other – I may have another guest coming on behind this person. You know, so whenever I – you probably do the same thing. Whenever I say, hey, especially if you're interviewing an author, you say, hey, where can they find your book? Where can I, they know that that's the cutoff right
now.
You know, so
– Of course.
And
–
most people know that. And, you know, I mean, it's been great having you on the show. It's wonderful. I'm going to come on your show. And one other question, would you like a link to this show to put on your blog or website? I can send it to you. I think I have your email that I can send it.
I would be happy to do that. And I would be happy to share this conversation with my audience, and I would be happy to link to the show. Definitely. Most definitely I'm going to share it on my blog. That's for sure.
Because you know what? This show was fun. It was fun.
It was. And I had such a good time. Thank you so much for inviting me. This is probably one of the best conversations I've had with, you know, it's really just feels very natural. Like I'm talking to my old buddy. Right. As opposed to talking to someone I just met. So thank you so much, Judge.
Alexandria, you always invited back, okay?
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks for being on the show. Bye bye. All right, that was Alexandria Okorija on the George Wilder Jr. Show. She was great, she was wonderful, and I loved it. She loved it. And I will be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Stay with me. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, and welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of Chicago, 347-857-1762. Is that right? Okay. We've been having some fun here. It's been a great time with Alexandria. I'm still going to screw up her last name, so I won't say it, but she was beautiful. She was marvelous. I'm going to thank her. And she will get a link to this show so she can put it up on her website so other people can listen to it. That was beautiful. That was wonderful. Okay, let's move right along. Donald Trump, he's leading in the national polls, but only by 3 points. He's leading by 3 points. Poll, Trump holds party weekends. On party weekends. I mean, they are really trying to get this guy out. I mean, they are really trying to get it. For Cruz, he's got a chance. I'm talking about the Republicans here. Marco needs a miracle. Trump contested. You know, all of those negative ads that they're running against Trump, the Republican establishment, all of those negative ads, they are working against this guy. They are working because his poll numbers are down. But I'm going to tell you, on the Republican side, I would not vote for neither Republican because I don't think Neil are qualified. But Trump is more safer than Cruz. I mean, what I'm saying is that I trust Trump. Trump more than I do Cruz as president. I really do, and a lot of other Democrats do so also, and a lot of other independents also do. Trust Trump a little bit more than they do Cruz, but it's a mess. This is a mess, and now they're talking about Bernie Sanders' age. That may play something into his poll numbers or not being able to pull off Michigan or something like that. They're giving Hillary Clinton the win in Michigan, even though the votes haven't even been cast because she's so way up in the polls, right? And they're knocking Bernie for his age and giving away free stuff and all that kind of thing. And, you know, I mean, they're just coming up with anything. And I'm a Bernie supporter, but I do believe Hillary Clinton is going to walk away with this thing, you know. And I early voted. I voted for Bernie for Super Tuesday. In I think they got something going on tonight, some sort of primary. Every time you look around, they're voting, you know. They're voting, 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 voting. All right, Trump, the Trump test. He is something else. Donald Trump is all over the news. It's one of the reasons why I'm talking. Better Business Bureau, Trump lied about Trump University's rating. The Better Business Bureau is on Trump's butt. Despite the bickering, McConnell won't budge on the budget agreement. Oh, these old creeps. What can you say? These are creeps. What happened when two black reporters attended CPAC? I'm assuming they were kicked out. And this reporter, what's her name? She won $55 million for someone peeping through the hole and watching her naked or something. I'm not sure about that. I'm probably going to get verify that in a few. Seven Flint families filed federal class action suits over poison water. They ought to. And the governor, Wick Snyder, of Flint, Michigan, should resign. This guy knew what he was doing, murdering kids. This guy knew it, and filing federal class action suits over the poison, it is great. That's wonderful. That is wonderful. Wow. It's long overdue, if you ask me. If you ask me. Wow, CBS this morning refused to let Trump phone in. I guess they're sick and tired of hearing that garbage that he spews, you know. So, and, you know, it's just too much going on in the news. It's just too much going on. So when I come back, I'm going to be talking about Bruce Rauner. I mean, this is something. I was going to make this entire show dedicated to our governor, Bruce Rauner. This is one awful guy. It's pathetic. So when we come back, I'm going to do something here. Let me see. Bring up a clip. I'm doing a book on elder abuse, so I'm going to play one of these clips I have on elder abuse. Like we also have here getting book reviews. We'll do that next time. This you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, and we will be right back.
My name is Carol Howell, and I'm with UC Davis Center for Healthy Aging, and it is my pleasure to introduce Dr. Laura Mosqueda. She is the Chief of Geriatrics at UC Irvine School of Medicine, and she's a professor of family medicine and holds the Ronald W. Reagan Endowed Chair in Geriatrics. She sees patients at the UC Irvine Senior Health Center and participates in research and education as well. And her topic today is on elder abuse. Thanks, Carol. It's a pleasure to be here to talk to you about this important topic of elder abuse. It's going to be a challenging topic, though. This is something that we don't talk about very often, and I think we really need to start challenging everybody in our society to think about this issue of elder abuse and understand it a little bit more. It's challenging in a number of different ways. I want people to imagine what it's like in terms of what elder abuse really is, to really ponder what it means to people, to take it beyond just the fact that, oh, that's a real shame that this occurs in our society, but to understand it as the trauma it really is to the people who are directly affected by it and everybody who loves them. I want you to acknowledge that this really exists, and I'm going to prove it to you as we talk today. And I want you to believe two things. I want you to believe that anyone can be a victim and anyone can be a perpetrator. And this, I think, is particularly challenging for us to really understand and take in. Well, what do we mean when we talk about elder abuse? There are a variety of categories of elder abuse as defined in state law in California, and I have them listed here on the screen: physical, sexual, financial abuse, neglect by other people towards somebody, neglecting yourself, issues of abandonment and abduction where people are actually taken across state lines, and psychological abuse. All of these types of abuse that I've just mentioned are reportable abuse. In other words, we are required, many of us, to report these to the state if we have a suspicion, although psychological abuse or emotional abuse is an optional report. We're going to focus in on the topic of physical abuse, neglect, and some issues related to sexual abuse as well. I'm going to go through a few examples, and unfortunately I have to tell you that these examples are based on real cases that I have been involved in. Here's an example of financial abuse. A 55-year-old woman who threatens her mother, "If you don't sign on the dotted line to pay for my car, you're going to go into a nursing home." Another example, a 30-year-old man who befriends a widow. She's lonely, she's depressed, she lost her husband less than a year ago. And what people who are sort of predators will often do is find a hole, a gap, an emotional need somebody has, and fill that. And what does he do? He obtains the password for her ATM card and offers to help her buy groceries. And then he also helps himself to cash so that he has some for his own spending, to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars over a period of a year. Examples of physical abuse: pulling somebody's hair, in fact, dragging somebody by their hair across a carpet, throwing food or objects at somebody, denying access to pain medication, slapping, hitting, punching. A recent case I'm involved in involves a 16-year-old girl who was punching her grandmother in the face. These are the sad realities of what's going on. One of the more hidden types of abuse that I'd like to bring to your attention has to do with neglect. And before I give you some examples of neglect, I think it deserves a little bit of an explanation. When we talk about neglect, we're talking about a relationship, somebody who has assumed responsibility or care and custody for another individual who's unable to care for themselves. And when this person who has assumed this responsibility does not provide appropriate care, such as basics, food, clothing, and shelter, medical care, making sure the person's hygiene is reasonably taken care of, looking after things like health and safety hazards, when these things are not attended to in a reasonable way, we call this neglect. Here are some of the examples that I've seen. People who are lying in urine and feces, and I don't just mean a dirty diaper for a few minutes here or there. I mean people who are lying in their own urine and feces for hours, days, weeks at a time. People who have very elongated, filthy nails, matted hair, living in filthy conditions. People who are not fed or given fluids and they become malnourished and dehydrated. It's not good enough for somebody who's unable to get around to just leave some food at the bedside if they can't reach for it and feed themselves. People who develop deep open wounds that we call pressure sores, sometimes all the way down to their bones, because no one has repositioned them and they're unable to move on their own. These are some examples of neglect that we see. Well, how common is this problem of elder abuse? It's a great question, but it's a very hard one to answer. As you can imagine, it's hard to just knock on somebody's door and say, is anybody abusing grandma? So the question then becomes, how do we figure out how common a problem it is? We also need to understand that there are some difficulties in establishing abuse related to people's reluctance to even admit it's occurring. Not only can we not knock on the door to ask if anybody's abusing grandma, but grandma might not want to tell us if there's abuse going on. She might be ashamed that her own grandson is doing this to her. Many older adults fear losing their independence and, in fact, would rather remain at home in an abusive situation than go to a facility such as a nursing home. Again, a very sad reality. And unlike children, older adults can just sort of fade quietly away in our society and nobody thinks about it, nobody questions it. With kids, if they don't show up at school, we wonder what has happened to them. But we're very accepting of older adults sort of disappearing, oh, they got sick and you never see them again. So it's hard to know really what's going on sometimes. People who are being abused might be so incapacitated physically, cognitively, emotionally, that they're unable to even report that they're being abused. So people might be too incapacitated to report, but the other thing that sometimes occurs is that signs of abuse may be missed or mistaken for usual aging. After all, it's pretty common to have bruises as we get older. It's not uncommon to have a hip fracture, and so it can be really difficult to tell whether or not some of these injuries were a result of abuse or just something that happened by mistake. So I'm going to give you our best guess or guesstimate in terms of how common abuse is, but we also want to recognize that it probably is an underestimate. The best study we have so far is called the National Elder Abuse Incident Study, published 10 years ago now, 1998, where there was some attempt to quantify the problem. And this is what they found, is that in a one-year period, there were 236,000 reports of seniors abused at home and 50,000 reports of abuse in nursing homes. I want you to really pay attention to this because one of the common myths is that abuse occurs in nursing homes and it's really not an issue in society, when the reality is that the vast majority of abuse occurs in private homes and the most common perpetrator is a family member. What did they learn? Well, not only do you have 236,000 reports of abuse in the community, 50,000 in nursing homes, but for every report of abuse, at least five. Some people think maybe triple that. Go unreported. So when you look at the numbers, you're talking about at least a million older adults in 1998 victims of abuse. This is a big problem. So what happens now when we start projecting out in terms of numbers of older adults who live in the United States? And let's take a look at a graph for just a moment to examine this issue. You can see that the number of people over the age of 65, of course, is rising at a very, very rapid rate. One of the wonderful things now is that our life expectancies have gone up in a very dramatic fashion in just the past 100 years. But pay attention in particular to this red line, people who are 85 and over. They are the most rapidly growing segment of our society in the United States. Their numbers of people over the age of 85 are growing at an exponential rate. Look at the way the number takes off after the year 2030, and that's not very far off. Why do we have a special category for elders? I mean, in California, the law is that after the age of 65 is when we call something elder abuse. Does that mean it's okay to abuse somebody when they're 64 and then on their birthday at 65 it becomes criminal? Well, the reason we really talk about this special category for elders is that as we grow older, we do become more vulnerable to mistreatment. And so it just becomes a practical matter to have kind of an age cutoff for it, which I think is a reasonable way to go. What are some of these vulnerabilities? Well, as we grow older, it might be harder to defend ourselves from being abused. It might be harder to defend yourself from somebody coming at you with a blow. So it might be harder physically to defend yourself. And certainly emotionally, it might be harder to defend yourself against some of the verbal attacks that can be landed at you. You also may be more dependent on others than you have in the past. We're all used to and enjoy being fairly independent creatures. And now if we begin to have some difficulty and we need help with very personal things like dressing, like grooming, like hygiene, all of a sudden there are more people involved in your life, more hands touching you, and again, vulnerabilities increase. There's also this fear that we talked about a few minutes ago, fear of losing your independence if a report is made. So now somebody might really be able to threaten you, sign over the house or I won't let you live in your own home anymore to help you stay in your own home. You'll have to go into a nursing home. Older adults are very susceptible to these sorts of threats, and that's quite easy to imagine. I want to spend just a moment talking to you about dementia as a special issue. I certainly have observed time and time again that people with dementia are particularly vulnerable to elder abuse. Alzheimer's disease, of course, is the most common type of dementia, and we need to recall that dementia is not just memory loss, but loss of other cognitive functions, so that people with a dementia certainly have short-term memory loss, but also have problems with things like judgment, reasoning, insight, language, difficulty comprehending things. And so you can imagine as people go through different stages of dementia, their risk of abuse also can be quite high. So in the early stages when you're having memory trouble and difficulty comprehending things, people might have you sign on the dotted line and you might lose thousands of dollars, you might lose your house, other sorts of financial abuse that occurs. As people then move through the different stages of dementia and in the very end stage be very dependent, they may end up suffering from some very severe neglect. Dementia gets much more common as we grow older. So if you look at everybody over the age of 65, about 3 to 5% of people have a dementing illness. But past the age of 85, you're probably dealing with close to half of our population with dementia. And remember back to that slide we looked at a moment ago in terms of the growth of people over the age of 65, the growth of the number of people over the age of 85 in our society. People who have dementia may be unable to report abuse. You may no longer be able to use a telephone. Or know how to make a report. One thing that really scares me is we tend to really discount people who have dementing illnesses like Alzheimer's disease. So if a report is made, they're not believed. After all, they have a dementia. We really can't believe anything they say, and they get discounted. And people, particularly in the middle and later stages, may be unable to even recognize that they're being abused because they have such severe cognitive difficulties, they don't even comprehend the bad situation that they're in. Well, why is this happening? Why does elder abuse occur? And we don't really know the answer to this question, but I want to throw out a few possibilities for us to think about, and perhaps you can argue about them with some folks later on. Is it a mental illness problem? Or is it a caregiver who has, say, a bipolar disorder or has schizophrenia or has some other sort of mental health problem that makes them unable to properly care for a loved one? Is it that we just live in a violent society, that now pushing and shoving and hitting people has become more commonplace, and this is now translating into older adults as well? Is it a sense of entitlement? I'm going to get that money anyway. I may as well get it sooner than later. Is it stress? Boy, I'm trying to take care of the kids. My husband wants dinner as soon as he gets home. And now I'm taking care of his mother, my mother-in-law, and I just can't handle it.
All right, George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We are back, and we're going to be talking about Bruce Rauner, the governor of Illinois. This state, Illinois, is going into its ninth month without a budget. And it seems like Bruce Rauner and the legislature are just sitting back, letting this station fall off a damn cliff. They're sitting as though if nothing's wrong and people are losing their jobs. Universities are laying off. The public schools are furloughing teachers. Colleges, universities are furloughing teachers because the state is failing to pay its bills. For the last 3 or 4 days, there's been no sign or nothing said from Bruce Rauner. And when he comes out to talk, he's always talking about it's his way or the highway, you know, making threats, blaming people. But now he's nowhere to be found. He's letting all these things happen, and we're talking about firing this guy, getting his ass up out of the governorship, maybe even out of Illinois. This man has got to go. He doesn't give, not just me saying that, it's the Chicago Sun-Times, it's the Chicago Tribune, it's the Chicago Defender. Everybody is saying this man is ruining, setting back and just ruining Illinois. Because he can't get to bust unions, he can't get to eliminating collective bargaining. And he's just letting this, every time one of these people complain or rally against this guy, he's up. He comes, puts his face on television, and starts blaming Michael Madigan. I mean, he really blisters Michael Madigan. But we know who it is. It's Bruce Rauner, because if he had not been elected, he was never elected. He bought the election, okay? A couple of house niggers helped him do that. And most of all, people did not vote. But now we got him, so we got to, you know, figure out a way to get rid of him. People, you just cannot sit back and let this guy get out here in droves, hundreds and thousands and thousands on thousands, and throw this guy out. Don't just talk about a recall. Initiate one. I've seen a few recall petitions going around on the internet, but nothing really substantial. People are being laid off their jobs. Funding has been caught for being stopped for vital programs. When are people going to – you can't let this guy just come in here out of nowhere, the state of Illinois. Fire him. Get rid of him. He's not doing his job. We're going into the ninth month with no budget. Nobody's getting paid. Nothing's happening. People are scared crapless. People are homeless. Programs have been strapped. Senior programs have been strapped. Kids for daycare centers have been scrapped. Programs for the hungry has been scrapped. Meals for the elderly has been, and nobody seems to give a good goddamn. Michael Madigan, I'm going to say this, he needs to go. He's a Democrat. He needs to go to get out. Maybe he's just too damn old at 80. I don't know. But he sits there sometimes like he, hey, I didn't do nothing. It ain't me. It's him. But I'm just afraid of this guy who's running against Madigan is probably a plant by Bruce Rauner. I don't know that for sure, but hey, anything's possible. The guy bought the election. And now Ken Duncan, a turncoat Democrat, African-American, now he's running, now he's lying, and he's got up a commercial. I mean, yeah, he's got up a, what do you call it, an ad on television. He must think people are fools, Ken Duncan. He voted with Rauner. He's taken Rauner money, and now he's saying, vote for me. I'm the best thing going. Ken Duncan, are you nuts? Are you crazy? He's bought and paid for by the Rauners to vote against anything that the Democratic legislature wants. And he's constantly voting against things. That's why his ass will not have a job after March 15th. Hopefully he will not. And I want to tell everybody, I did vote. I mean, I voted, but I voted for the best person for the job, not the person who has the most name recognition, not the person who has the most money. I voted for the person who can do the job. And we are really pissed off about Bruce Rauner. There's an article that was in the Sun-Times today, and it really blistered Bruce Rauner. It really said some things about Bruce Rauner. I'm pretty sure he's not paying attention to it. He never read it. You know, I'm pretty sure the people around him saying that I don't read it, Bruce. This is crazy. 9 months, and the state is falling the hell apart under these people who seem to be just sitting back and letting this happen. They're sitting and letting this happen. Bruce Rauner, he doesn't feel there's any urgency at all to produce a budget for the state. Illinois has never been like this before. Yeah, we've had our problems, financial problems, but it's never, ever been this bad. It's never, ever been this bad, okay? The notices, like I just got through saying, give the article in the Sun-Times, from my understanding, says, give Rauner a pink slip. All right, students losing state aid, artistic kids denied desperately needed assistance, and state vendors going belly up due to unpaid invoices is truly disheartening. This sickening crisis is due to unconscionable actions of a governor trying to run Illinois like one of the many acquired companies he broke up en route to fabulous personal wealth. Basically, Rauner's trying to turn this state around to a mess so he can make money and his cronies can make money, ruining Illinois. Governor Bruce Rauner took a solvable financial dilemma in Illinois and turned it into a cruel assault on Illinois' middle class and most vulnerable to further enrich his base, his friends. He used his wealth to essentially buy the governorship to implement a pretend turnaround agenda. So therefore, he never wanted a turnaround agenda. He lied his way into office, and now he's ruining the state for riches for his pals. For his pals. This is just awful, folks. This is just awful. Pretend a turnaround agenda which has done nothing but turn around for the worst lives of folks with whom Rauner can never identify. Oh, man, people of Illinois, why don't you get up, get out, and throw this guy a bone? Tell him he's fired, kick him out, he's not doing his job, the state is in a worse shape than it ever before, and all Rauner can do is come out and blame Michael Madigan, the Speaker of the House in the legislature of Illinois. Okay, this reporter goes on to say, having followed Illinois politics for over 60 years, I have seen 5 governors indicted, 4 of whom were jailed, yet none did so much damage to so many as the heartless business mogul who's literally playing with people's lives and livelihood to ram his pro-business agenda down the Illinoisans' collective throats. Rauner still functions on the disease vulture capitalist mindset that if an acquired company doesn't bend to his will, it must be broken. Exactly. If somebody doesn't do what he wants, then he's going to destroy it. That's his agenda. He wants to destroy the schools. He wants to destroy Illinois because Illinois, Rauner is a Republican, okay? And the people in the legislature are Democrats. So if he says he can't get what he wants to destroy them. He wants to try to, but Rauner is just one man. And folks of Illinois, we are in the millions. Why do we accept this? Why don't we do something about this? Sitting back and letting this happen, sitting back and letting the state go over the cliff because we got this asshole governor who bought the office in the first place. People did not get out there and vote. And now he's ruining Illinois with his fake turnaround agenda, And then he comes and brings his ass on television and try to seem all merciful and caring. And he doesn't. Proves through his actions that it doesn't. And then he blames other people. I mean, he really blames Michael Madigan. I mean, he talks about Michael Madigan like he's a low-down, dirty dog. And that's no way to get things done. You're not going to get anything done, Bruce, by name-calling. You get things done by working with people, governing, and realizing who you're dealing with. You're dealing with a Democratic legislature, and these people are not going to let you step on their values. He can't seem to realize that. The guy can't even seem to realize that he's a public figure. And this is happening too much around the country with Republican governors. And I've said this 1,000 times on the show. The reason why we have Republican governors in these governorships around the country, especially in the South, is because African Americans did not care, did not carry their asses to the polls and vote. People, this is what you get when you do not vote. I didn't vote for Rauner, and I'm proud of it, but it's too many people out here who did not vote at all, period. They didn't vote at all. And now look what we got. And a lot of the people, I understand, they wish they had their votes back because Rauner's policies, or lack of, is ruining their lives, upend their lives. This is crazy. This is loony. This man is sitting back and destroying the state and blaming other people. 2 or 3 newspapers in the city of Chicago blames Rauner. I blame Rauner. A lot of other people, the students at these schools, Chicago State and colleges and universities around the city of Chicago, whose funding is being upended because of this guy. He won't do anything. And then when he does these nasty things to Illinois, he blames someone else for it and expect for you to believe it. He's so nasty and vindictive. I mean, he talks about Michael Madigan like he's a scoundrel. I mean, if you've heard him, go dig up some of those videos on YouTube or wherever they are and listen to how he just rails at Michael Madigan. And Michael Madigan sit there like a little kid taking it. But the people of Illinois, we know what's going on. We know who to blame. It's this do-nothing Bruce Rauner. Bruce Rauner, get his ass out. He wasn't voted in. He bought it. You didn't vote. That's why he's got the office. And I'm telling people now, if you don't vote in the November election for 2016, we're going to have a Republican president. You've got to get out there and vote, folks. You cannot stay home. The Republicans and their base, they're energized. They want to do this. We got to have women, young people, old people, fat people, skinny people, black people, white people, Mexicans. We got to have people getting out there and throwing these jackasses out of office. Out of office. It can be done. Oh, man. Okay, I've seen governors indicted, 4 of whom... Yeah, you know what? I've said this from the onset. I said Bruce Rauner's going to wind up being corrupt. He's going to wind up going to jail. I said this about a month or two after he took office. And I still believe that. I'm looking at something in the Sun-Times, I mean in the Tribune, that's saying basically the same thing. Rauner, there's no doubt about it. Rauner is going to be leaving the governor's office in handcuffs. It should be against the law for some of the things that he's doing or not doing in the state of Illinois. Because if he's not doing it, he's not doing his job. There are so many things that I can run down a litany of things that this guy has done or hasn't done that's affecting Illinois because he can't get his damn way. He can't get his way. And I'm going to say this to you, Bruce. You will never get your damn way in Illinois. We're going to find a way of getting your ass out, throwing you out, not just out of the governorship, but maybe out of Illinois, period. Because you're trying to take this state to its knees. And this state is already, people are homeless. People out here are homeless. People are being upended from their jobs because this guy will not fund these programs. Colleges, universities, students out there protesting this guy. And what is he doing? Blaming it on Michael Madigan. And nobody, and we know who it is. Michael Madigan and the legislature have sent him a lot of funding bills that he refused to sign. Laugh at it and refuse to sign. This guy needs to be gone. He needs to get out. But people is going to take you. Like I've said before, I've seen many, many recall petitions, and I've seen many things around the social media saying fire him, get him out, but those are just empty words if there's no action put behind them. They're just empty words if there's no action put behind them. All right, folks, you're listening to George Wilder Jr. of the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I want to thank my guest, Alexandria. She was great. She was wonderful, and I hope one day she can return to the show. Yeah, she was wonderful. And if you haven't heard her, if you have not heard her, once the show is over in about 2 or 3 hours, just listen to it. I'm going to promote it anyway because I always promote the guests who are who have something really to say to me and my audience of the show. 347-857-1762. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. And this oh, man, this is something. This is Blog Talk Radio, WPTTY. Yeah. Bruce Rauner has got to go, folks. He's got
to go. You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you.
Yeah, welcome back. That's Open Our Eyes. A lot of people have asked me the name of that song. I play it almost every night to signify the ending of the show, the ending of the episodes for the show. So that's, and I believe it's by a group called the Gospel Clefs. Gospel Clefs. Is that right? Okay, good. All right, we were talking about Bruce Rauner and how he is just letting the state just, like he just don't give a damn. If it's something he can't get, then he's going to try and destroy it. He wants it destroyed. And I'm so glad that the teachers decided not to strike, because that's what Rauner wants. Rauner wants chaos. I've said this a few months back in the show. The guy wants a mess. He wants chaos. He wants a mess. So once there is a big mess, he's going to blame the Democrats. He wants a mess. He wants chaos. He wants turmoil. And that's what's happening, because he's going to use that turmoil, like I just got through saying, he's going to use that turmoil and turn it against the Democrats. And by turning it against the Democrats, he's going to try and get every one of those Democrats replaced and turn that legislature into a Republican legislature. I don't think that's going to work, folks. Because Rauner, I remember Rauner saying at one of the governor's balls or whatever it was, he was saying that he was going to, in 8 years, he's going to make Chicago, Illinois, a Republican state. And that's what he's trying to do, him and his buddies. And also, you know, in turn, they get rich doing it. That's what it's all about, folks. And I'm trying to urge Illinoisans right now as I speak, stop this guy. You have the power. Stop him. We don't have to wait till 2018 to get this guy out. We need him out now. He's not doing his job. He's hurting purposely. Ladies and gentlemen, he is purposely hurting this state. And he thinks we're dumb enough to think that we ought to blame the Democrats. Of course, Illinois has been in the red for a long time, even before he's gotten in office. But it has gotten worse under this guy, just like the Tribune articles said. This sickening crisis is due to an unconscionable action of a governor trying to run Illinois like one of the many acquired companies he broke up en route to fabulous personal wealth. He's gotten rich breaking up companies. And the guy tried to run the public schools. How in the hell can you run the public schools when you can't even run a state? He wants to take over the schools. And do what? Run it into the ground like he's doing the state? We got to get this guy out of here. He doesn't give a damn about not being liked. He doesn't care. It's his way or the highway. And every time you hear him speak, that's all he's saying, basically. No matter how long he speaks for, basically it comes down to his way or the highway. And if you try to read anything else into what he's saying, it's not there. So Illinois has to get up off his ass and throw this guy out. We're hurting. We're in pain. We've been cut. And it's all because of this man, this governor, Bruce Rauner. Do something, Illinois. I'm doing my part. I'm getting the word out. I'm talking to you. The guy has got to go. He has got to go. Bruce Rauner has got to go. Bookmark this show. Download this show. He has got to go, folks. All right, this is George Wilder Jr. Of the George Wilder Jr. Show. Look me up on Facebook. Blog, check out my books on Amazon. And we're just about off the air, folks. I will see you here tomorrow night. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.